Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers and their Grizzly range. The next generation of Grizzly is here. Meet the Grizzly Ultimate, the most powerful AC level 2 charger for home use. With a maximum current of 80 amps, that's 19.2 kilowatts. Your vehicle could be charged up to twice as fast as a standard level 2 and up to 15 times faster than a level 1. And of course, it's Wi-Fi connected, so you can take control of your home charging, view stats, set a charging schedule, take part in demand response programs, and control your charger remotely. And that joins the lineup alongside the original Grizzly Classic. The Grizzly Duo, designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a portable charging station. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. Those chargers can adjust the current from 16 amps up to 40 amps, that's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, the Grizzly Ranger IP67 rated, built in Canada, and with the highest quality materials, you can order yours right now. Go to unitedchargers.com, that's unitedchargers.com.
Watcher, hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast for Friday, April 4th, 2025, episode 82. And on today's show, we'll be talking about how tariffs will affect electric vehicles, the new Hyundai Ioniq 6 refresh, and an N-line trim. But what about a spicy one? And two more Chinese automakers announcing megawatt charging. And of course, much, much more. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast. Joining us today is Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic. And more importantly, our special guest this week, as Tom is off doing secret things, is Lacey, host of Misco Electric and the family of YouTube channels. Lacey, it's so good to have you on. It's awesome to see your channels grow and the videos, the weekly updates that you do. For anyone joining us, perhaps any of our viewers, I'm sure everyone knows who you are, but any of our viewers and listeners that aren't aware how your sort of growing content creation is out there, what sort of subjects do you cover and where can people find you?
Yeah, so as most people have seen me talk about this a few times, but hello to all the new people. My main YouTube channel, I try to talk about car reviews and the weekly EV news segment that's 10 minutes long. So if you want like a jam-packed information based, like just deep dive within 10 minutes, we could talk about all of that. And then I have a ride reviews channel where I cover e-bikes, scooters, and motorcycles that are electric. And then I have an industry channel, which I have a lot coming up pretty soon here that's going to get published within the next couple days from the EV charging summit that I went to. And I actually saw Tom and Kyle there, which was awesome. And so, yeah, I have three channels. So if you want to follow along and get in the weeds with more EV stuff, which I know all of you guys do because you're here right now, then follow along.
Absolutely. You're in the right place for it. If you're watching a weekly podcast about EVs, then you're probably in the right place. And so, yeah, you mentioned Charging Summit videos coming to your industry channel. What are some of the highlights that you have, without giving too much away, from that event?
Yeah, actually, I was kind of surprised, and I know Tom had mentioned this last week, but I was also very surprised as to how big the show was, and also just the amount of solutions there are for the different problems that are in EV charging. And I think even some that people might not even realize are getting solved, which was so cool for you know, someone like me to see, because I love getting in the weeds with that kind of stuff. And so where it wasn't only just software side of the problems that we were seeing, but hardware side of the problems, it was just really incredible. So we did several sit down interviews with some of the industry leaders that were that had booths there at the show. So I have one from ABB e-mobility coming up. I have one from a company called EJ Ward, who does a lot of the fleet electrification stuff and tracking how to be able to manage all of the EV side of the business, because it's you know, figured out for the gas side. But as far as converting to fleets and making sure everything stays on track, that's kind of a new issue that had popped up over the years. And then also BTC Power, they've been in the business for a really long time, and they have some new product coming out, and they're making some changes in their business. So we have videos from all of those that are coming, and I'm just waiting to drop some B-roll on top of stuff. So they're coming like within either tonight or tomorrow. So
amazing. Amazing. Mm-hmm. And you know, you are doing this, your weekly show is incredible. I envy your brevity. Yeah, I know.
Because professionalism too, right? Like it's all like proper like graphics and everything. It's like so pro. It's like, it's proper.
Well, thank you. I spend a lot of time on it. And, you know, my producer, Tim, some of you that know him, he's like, oh my gosh, it takes so much time. And I'm like, I just want to keep doing it though, because, you know, the audience, the community there is very sophisticated now that it's been running for over a year. And so the comment section, I think, is actually like super valuable. And Tim helps, you know, manage that and kind of bring more insight to things. And so it's just been really incredible to see the community build up around it. And, you know, from what I'm seeing, it's the most watched weekly EV news segment on the internet right now. So that's a really, I'm very proud of that, because I put in a lot of work for it. So yes, join us every week.
Absolutely. Yeah. And nice. it is a good use of your, because I can rattle out a half hour podcast of just chit chatting, and that's a day.
I know.
And I'm like, man, I wish I could say the same amount in, you know, four fewer words and do it like you do it. So that script is so tight. It's such a good use of people's time. Everyone's busy, right? It's such a great thing to subscribe to. And you know, when I see, you know, Bjorn's videos or his live streams, which are 4 hours long, or Kyle's videos, which are 2 hours long, I'm like, right, I'll save that for later. But when I see something that's 10 minutes long or 20, I'm like, well, I can watch it now. You know, I've got the time. So we like the short stuff on YouTube. Well, I do anyway. What have we got coming up? Because I've been covering Formula E for a really long time, and you know, many people know I used to work in Formula One as well as the voice of the F1 podcast. Might be doing some more stuff again at some point after taking last year off, because it kind of killed me with the US. There's more US races thanks to the Netflix effect, and that's a great thing. But yep. I'm 5 hours ahead of you guys, and I've got two little human alarm clocks at 5 a.m. And I was often finishing at, you know, 2, 3, 4 a.m. In the 2023 season, because I was always UK-based, and it killed me. So I'm huge into motors, so I love it. But for some reason, Formula E, and I've been covering it for years, Formula E hasn't... there is just something, and I like, I'm the EV guy. Like, there's something about the noise or the tracks they were on in cities. And they were going to cities because you can't do motor racing there. It's too noisy. And they were going to play. They were bringing sport to places that had never, you know, been before. And that's really important. I don't want to do it down. But I've just never really, for some reason, viscerally connected with Formula E. But I'm really trying this year. And I love the extra strategy of the pit stops. I forget what they're called. The 60-second charging. And there's been some cracking races. The highlights are on YouTube now. Are you going to go to Miami and watch Formula E with ABB, Lacey?
Yes. Yeah. So ABB invited us to go to, you know, they had previously invited us to go to the race in Portland last year, and we went, which was really cool to see. And then this summer we went to NASCAR because they were launching their EV prototype. And so it's just so interesting to see their, you know, tapping into electric racing in a really unique way. But as far as Formula E goes, yes, I think like really popular as far as European viewership in comparison to the United States. It's not nearly as close as what we would expect with Formula One, like you're saying, Martin. But I'm excited to see this new generation because it's a slight variation from the previous year. That it's called the Gen 3 platform, and the one that is for season 11 has kicked off is the Evo. So it's an evolution, and it is like 30% faster than an F1 car from 0 to 60 in 1.8 seconds, which is really impressive. So like the performance is there, and I just love seeing from year to year, because this is the 11th season, the progression of where it started in Gen 1, where they were swapping out cars during the race in order to make sure that they could race for the full time, to like getting to a point where now they're doing those pit stops of like, you can get that 30-second charge and it's going to power you up with 600 kilowatt really quick and give you a little extra boost. But strategy is very interesting. I'm interested to see also if Gen 4, which happens in 2026, it's the new platform that's going to be even more powerful and even more exciting to watch, I think, especially considering they got some new suppliers with, you know, the batteries and things of that nature. But, you know, if there's going to be a way that they can kind of entice more people to get into watching the series, because it is, to me, it's highly entertaining. And they have a lot of different elements to try to make it closer with the race strategy and try to get more overtaking. So, yeah, we'll see what happens in Miami. But I'm excited to talk to more people, especially in the pits and the team, the crews that are working on the cars. We're going to interview some people there to get a little bit more insight on, you know, how this ultimately affects the road cars. Because, you know, it's been a transition. I don't know if it's been implemented too much. Porsche has talked about that they have implemented some of the technology that they've used in Formula E in their road cars, but you know, at this stage, 11 seasons in, what's it look like for, for car companies?
And they're going to racetracks that are racetracks now. The race at in Mexico City at the Autódromo Hermanos Rodríguez was a fantastic event, a fantastic race, you know, genuinely, because you see them on the wider tracks that you see other Formula on. And, it, you know, Formula E is really, really good now. They're not just on these tiny little twisty town and city circuits that you can't really do a lot of overtaking and stuff. Yeah, and you know, all-wheel drive. Yeah,
you know,
really,
like, they can get up to 200 miles per hour. Let's see it.
Yeah. You know, all-wheel drive now. So that front motor was previously only used for regen, and now it can be, you know, fully engaged. So for anyone who's watching this that likes, you know, that's maybe seen just the headline that Lewis Hamilton joined Ferrari, because that, you know, for many people who like the sport, you've probably seen, because he's the biggest star in the world.
That was like shocked the world.
Yeah. So the guy who, the like his team boss, is the guy who owns a company called Spark, and Spark have always had the contract to build the chassis for Formula E. So it's all connected, you see. So when you see Lewis Hamilton in red these days, you go, ah, his boss makes the chassis for Formula E, and you can roll out a little pub quiz fact or whatever, wherever you are in the
That's
bar.
Right.
I know that sometimes you have different, you know, cars or bikes in the Misco Electric garage. Anything of note at the moment or coming up?
To be honest, I've been traveling a lot, so I haven't even been driving my truck. I have a Rivian R1T Max Pack performance dual motor, but it's been sitting in the garage for a while now. So, you know, typically when I do leave here, I'm either on an airplane or I'm driving long distances and road tripping. But it's we actually, from the EV Charging Summit, had to go back up to Michigan because I'm in the process of moving to Tennessee. We actually went to Michigan, and then Tim has a Cybertruck. My producer Tim has a Cybertruck, so he had left it there in Michigan, and we just drove it down. So I will say, we on that road trip, we were kind of surprised, because over the course of the last few months, the full self-driving technology unsupervised has been like really incredible. Like, I've been shocked and amazed, and I'm like, well, this seems to me like they can solve full self-driving because of what I'm seeing here and what I'm experiencing. But this last revision, I'm not sure what happened, but it had been going out of the lanes and getting really close to people with the the adaptive cruise, like where it keeps in the gap in front of the car. So that has been kind of surprising to me, but it seems like it's, hopefully, I got an update today. Hopefully, there's some FSD revision there, because I think a lot of people are complaining about the fact that it's, you know, going outside of the lines and everything like that. But so,
right. I saw a guy yesterday. He was on in a I think it was a Facebook group, and showing he was on FSD, but he wasn't like taking the wheel, and he allowed the car to exit the highway, and it accelerated down the exit ramp instead of, you know, slowed down. And so it like scraped alongside the concrete barrier on the not good, right?
Yeah. So well, even, I mean, you are still in control. It is called
right, right, exactly. I mean, people, so.
Yeah,
people. Some people still out there don't understand that. You really like. So for the longest time, I wouldn't even use that, like FSD on the highway. But when I went down to Orlando, where I saw you, that was awesome.
Yeah.
I used it the way back, and it was really great on the highway. Before, it would just like hog the left lane on my car. It would just like sit there in the left lane. I hated that, so I wouldn't use it at all. But now it's, you know, making passes and getting back in the lane, and it's still not perfect yet. And you know, I don't trust any of these systems completely. I keep my hand like on the wheel. Why not? You know, why keep it in your lap? It's like comfortable on the wheel too, you know, just in case, you know, So you're there, you're holding it, or your hand's there. So if it takes a sudden jerk, which I've had happen before, you know, I've had it like misread like dark lines, like tire tracks on the road, like someone spun their tires or whatever. Or I think there was a farm tractor that's like these manure tracks off the side, and like read it as like road lines for some reason or other, just at that instant, and, you know, wanted to drive me off the road. So I just keep my hand on the thing. But yeah, anyway, sorry.
You gotta watch it.
Yeah. Yes, and we lost you for a second there, Martin. Welcome back.
Yeah, I mean, regular listeners, viewers will be very disappointed that I went through 90 minutes last week, problem-free, and yet only in the first first 15 minutes, my MacBook decided to it went kaput. Hey, let's talk about one of the big topics this week, and that is tariffs. Now, that is, you know, an economist's subject, but we'll try and explain it in terms of electric vehicles. Now, the United States had promised that there would be tariffs coming in on Wednesday, and indeed they did. We've been talking about them for months now. They were on again and off again, but they are now in place. They're wide-ranging, and we'll focus on the ones affecting EVs. Basically, 25% tariff on vehicles built outside of the United States, as well as certain auto parts like engines, transmissions, powertrains, and electrical components. There are some exceptions, though. So I'm going to quickly lay the table here. You know, I think it's fair to say the three of us are not economists. We can give you our thoughts on where the EV industry is, its, you know, maturation and pricing and how you get into one and what it could do to pricing. A lot of it's going to be speculation, though. A lot of people think they know what this all means. Often people who are paid to give their opinion, you know, on news channels and stuff. But I don't think anyone really knows, maybe for a year or more, you know, what the complete outcome of this will be. Now, like I say, I'll lay the table very quickly. Parts that comply with the rules for tariff-free trade under United States-Mexico-Canada agreement will not be subject to these new duties. There's need to be a process by the Commerce Department establishing a process to apply it only to the components in a non-US context, I think. And that is going to happen at some point in the future. So if a car is imported from Mexico that complies with those rules, only the parts that originated from outside North America are going to be taxed. The parts that are subject to tariffs include things used to build EVs, so EV motors and lithium-ion batteries, tires, brakes, hoses, steering wheels, all that kind of stuff. Even the cells that, you know, a big bit of Tesla's growing business is their energy storage business. Well, all of those cells are CATL cells from China, and that's going to have a 50%+ tariff on. So loads of bits of EV businesses are going to be affected, not just the nuts and bolts of building a vehicle. Now, the US claims that these tariffs will spur growth like you've never seen before. Some analysts disagree. Automotive News, fantastic industry outlet, they say, and I quote, according to an analysis by Anderson Economic Group, the president's remarks today suggest that automobile buyers and automobile workers are in for a shock starting in less than 1 month. Patrick L. Anderson, the firm's CEO, said in a statement, tariffs at these levels mean cost increases of $4,000 to $10,000, including most American cars, end quote. All right, so one silver lining is that the reciprocal tariffs won't apply to vehicles or parts. Those are tariffs which the administration imposed on goods from other countries and, you know, excludes things like Russia and Belarus, Cuba, North Korea, but otherwise. And I think the UK, we pretty much escaped these extra tariffs that came in as well. Special relationship and all that. The most immediate fallout we've seen is perhaps the Polestar 2 disappearing from the header on the US version of the Polestar website. That, of course, is made in China. Ford announced employee pricing for everyone on the same day that the tariffs kicked in as a signal that it was trying to minimize the impact. Inside EVs had a great piece yesterday with a chart that lists almost all of the EVs sold in the US with their country of manufacture and parts concentration by country. They say that 67 BEVs listed on the data set currently for sale in the US, 28 of the 67 are actually made in the US. Holy moly. It's a complicated topic. Like I say, none of us are economists, and I'm guessing if you're watching this and you are, can you come on and tell us what it all means? None of us have sort of studied this for 10 years and done the old, you know, 10,000 hours thing, as they say. But we will do our best to decipher it for the world of EVs. Dom, you've been working really hard on it this week, tracking all the news day by day. Dom, what are your thoughts as they stand at the moment?
Well, so I wasn't aware. I was kind of in... Well, it's I'm trying to think how I say this without swears.
Come on, it's a family show. Keep it clean.
Bleep.
Yeah, no, it's kind of a mess. I think, you know, I think the consensus out there in at least where I'm looking, it's 95% bad and 5% I feel like, you know, think it's going to be good. I was kind of surprised, though, they are respecting the, to some extent, the U.S., Canadian-Mexican trade deal that, you know, Trump himself was the one who put that current deal in place. You know, it replaced the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, as it was called, that we had for 30 years or so. So he brought in this new trade agreement, and it looks like for a little while they're going to respect that, but it looks like they're going to, I'm not really sure exactly, because some of this, because there's like two sets of tariffs going on, or three really if you include the tariffs on steel and aluminum, but so there's the tariffs on automobiles from, you know, the deals with Canada and the U.S. and from other countries. But then there's also these reciprocal tariffs on top of that, which is a whole different thing. And I'm sure that's going to affect things here as well. And that's, I think, in a lot of the news, that's kind of getting the a lot of the attention. And it's kind of a weird deal. So I found someone put up, it's all kind of Mickey Mouse too, right? So this is like a formula that I found online that they say was the basis for the terrorists, but it's like kind of like nonsense, right? It's got all these symbols that don't really
mean
anything. I feel
like that meme of that lady, there's just like math spinning all around. This is exactly what I'm feeling right now.
Absolutely. Right. It's like, okay, but basically what it is, it's the country's total exports to the U.S., and then take the country's total imports from the U.S., they subtract those things, and then they divide it by total imports, and which is, you know, there's a ton of unflattering descriptions of this of this formula online. It's kind of like basically nonsense to economists. That's what they're saying. It's this kind. It's like what is the Economist paper? I don't know if we have that quote in our notes or not. I might have taken it out, but they were saying it was something like, you know, putting on tariffs amounts by the number of vowels in the names of the country or something. It's like, doesn't really have anything to do with what actual tariffs they might have on our stuff or how those tariffs actually affect us. Because like we have like a 400%, or Canada has a 400% tariff on U.S. milk, but we don't pay that tariff unless we ship them a huge, you know, oversupply them with milk. And so it doesn't even kick in. So it's never... that tariff has never actually taken effect. It's just there to kind of, I don't know, acted as a trade wall, so that doesn't, you know, so we don't flood their market with our milk, basically. At least that's the idea.
I saw China this morning did retaliate, so they've got a 34% tariff that is basically going into effect on April 10th, I believe, in response.
Right, and that's going to be like basically everything that we buy from China.
I mean, that's what's crazy is that our, you know, battery supply chain, the raw materials that come from China, raw materials is 90%. Like it is, it is pretty drastic. Now, I'm interested in, you know, with the Inflation Reduction Act, when it was first put into place, there was incentive for manufacturers to build batteries in the United States so they could get anywhere between $35 to $45 per kilowatt hour that they produce here. And the rate of the percentage of like American-made components that go into it would increase every single year. And as far as I understand, that has not stopped. So certain EVs that are, you know, being built here with those percentages, I think this year, maybe it was like 60% or 50%. I can't remember exactly. I have to look that up. But the amount that had to be produced here in the United States. I mean, that seems like if there are companies like General Motors who are actually, you know, building those batteries here, unfortunately, then they send them over to Mexico to put them in the cars, and then the cars are assembled there, and then they come in. You know, there's still an issue there, but at least the supply chain of batteries that are getting built in the United States has had a few years to be incentivized to start getting the ball rolling as far as, you know, producing those batteries here. But it's still painful because this is a global automotive, you know, it's not just like the United States where we're producing vehicles. Automakers have to consider what they're doing globally in order to maximize their scale and their profits for building cars. And the one thing that I'm concerned about is the, you know, lower priced models. And we see that a lot in like the sedan form factor. You know, SUVs and trucks are more expensive generally. They have higher profit margins. So some brands have just stopped making them, like Ford and General Motors. But even some of those lower price point vehicles, I'm afraid that those are going to go up in price as well. And some manufacturers are going to decide it's not worth producing those anymore because of these tariffs. And so that's the affordability is scary because even on this podcast, I'm sure you guys get every week, like we want to talk about more affordable vehicles. We want to talk about the luxury segment or the high performance segment that are super expensive. We want more for affordability. And I get it, like that, of course, but it just seems like this path is going to be a rough one. And we really won't see the effects for a long time because even the parts and components aspect that they're introducing for the automotive business isn't going to kick in till like May 3rd, I believe. And so it's going to be a churn. Like we're going to take some time to see the true effects. And I've already seen Stellantis has decided to lay off a bunch of people and pause production in Canada and Mexico. You know, Sean Fain from the UAW, who's the president there, is all for this because he wants to see more workers come down into the United States to manufacture. I just don't know if that's going to be what actually happens because automakers have already been waiting for a long time to figure out what they were going to do as far as producing cars or building new factories. And we've seen a lot of them so far, but, you know, they all have been kind of just wait and see for a really long time because of when Trump got elected. They didn't know what was going to happen. And now I feel like it's an even longer period of wait and see because everyone's got to figure out what does it look like as far as what do we make in the United States versus what the increased tariff amount is going to be. Yeah. And then I saw that, you know, there's possibly going to be interest-free for customers who are buying cars that are made in America for financing a vehicle. So, well, I mean, it's still kind of, like I said, a wait-and-see moment. What's really going to happen and how is it going to increase the prices?
Yeah, those things all cost money. So I just want to mention, too, someone mentioned in the comments that China's imposed controls and different things on some rare earth elements that we need for, yeah, for batteries. And I think we use those in inverters and other places as well. It's not just electric motors, sorry. A lot of electric motors. We don't really use rare earths in lithium batteries, but in inverters and motors, yeah, there's different ones in there. I'm not sure if the exact ones, you know, I was looking at, I did see a couple that I recognize. They all have the rare earths, all that is like Ethereum and weird names I don't really, I can't pronounce. But yeah, so that's a big, kind of a bit of a big deal, because we don't mine or process any of those things really in any amounts to kind of make up for that. So it's, yeah. Mm. Stellantis laid off 900 people, but in opposite of that though, Nissan is not laying off a shift at the plant in Smyrna that produces the Rogue, which is kind of interesting because. So this is kind of what tariffs do. They're kind of like anti innovation to me, and like I know a lot of people love the Nissan Rogue. You know, it's been kind of a said, you know, just the mainstay of the automobile scene in America. It's not too expensive, but it's not like innovative at all, right? And so because it's made here, so it's cheaper, so people will buy that. So people will, you know, buy according to price rather than innovation or, and that's just so.
But there's still components globally. That's the thing, is like, okay, it is made here, but then how is it going to be affected with the percentage of the components that are globally produced and shipped into that factory to be put into the car? Oh, yeah. I saw also that they, although they are keeping the, you know, production and manufacturing going and shifts going for the Rogue in Smyrna, the Infiniti brand is pausing production in Mexico for their Q50 and QX50 and QX55 variants. Mm-hmm. So,
right.
And I guess Nissan needs all the help it can get at this stage. But yeah, it's,
yeah, I think
it's interesting to see how everyone's reacting.
I think Volkswagen and somebody else have a vehicle in Mexico that doesn't work with the USMCA agreement. So it's going to take a big hit, basically, and maybe it'll be cut as well. And as I mentioned, I think you mentioned the Polestar 2 is now gone from the Polestar website in the US.
Yeah.
So that's what you drive, Martin.
Right. And yeah. And
now,
I have people.
Now we can't have that anymore. But, so, yeah. But I wanted to say is like, I think this is a really great deal. I mean, it's for China, basically, because as I was saying, like, so tariffs are kind of like anti-innovation sort of protectionist legislation. And China is right now kind of has a technological lead ahead of us. And it's in the process of just taking over world markets like Latin America, Middle East, Southeast Asia. They're going into all these little markets with their over, because they've built so many, they've got so much EV inventory. You know, they're just, you know, making as many as they can now. They've got all their ducks all lined up in a row, and now they're just flooding the zone, so to speak. And we're sitting here, our automakers, we're already a little bit behind. And any plans for expansion, I think, are now are kind of, you know, how do you expand it in an economic environment like this? I don't see a way forward to really compete globally. So I'm not sure how long these tariffs are going to be in place, but man, we could, like, down the road a few years, it could really hollow out our entire industrial base, basically. And it's because it's not just cars, it's like everything.
I don't think China cares what you guys do. They might put reciprocal tariffs in place and things like that.
They don't care, really.
From an EV perspective, always put this in the perspective of electric vehicles, you know, they don't care. Like, there are no EVs sold in America that are Chinese domestic brands, and the ones that could have been made there, like the Polestars, Volvo EX30s, they had to move that production to Europe, and you know, that makes the vehicle more expensive, of course, to then make it here and ship it over, not as cheap as making it in China. And you have to ask why the vehicle was so cheap to be made in China. I know, I had an MG ZS EV, I've got a Polestar at the moment. You have to ask why those vehicles are so cheap. What's happening with the working practices in China, and nobody wants anybody to be exploited to make anything we need. A mobile phone, a tablet, a car. I'd rather not have that good if anyone was exploited to do that or taken advantage of. But if generally wages are lower, and then if somebody is earning, you know, the amount of money that they need and their lifestyle is not being exploited, and I'm not saying that doesn't happen in certain parts of the world, and then you need to say, well, how are you going to visit every factory and say, where did each of your raw materials come from, and look at every supply chain for every single consumer good you buy? You have to trust that those oversights and regulations are in place, and we don't know with China how much how those prices get to be so cheap. We have a pretty good idea.
Well, automation is playing a big role in it too. You know, our culture is that we like to support the American worker and like to have, you know, a union to make sure that there are jobs and, you know, and people are having good conditions in their working environment. So I think that China has really run away with automating so many things. I mean, I can't remember what brand it was more recently. I want to say it was like Zeekr or someone like that, or maybe even like a NIO or BYD had opened up a new factory. And then they did a fly through, and it was just like almost entirely robots and like automated, which is insane and cool. But like, they can get away with doing that kind of stuff there. They have such a huge, massive industrial manufacturing prowess when it comes to literally everything. I mean, like phones and cars and, you know, obviously clothing and all this kind of other things that we buy every single day. So they can kind of get away with, you know, having that kind of scale and being able to reduce on the automation side of things. Whereas like our industry kind of frowns upon doing that because we want to support the American worker, which is, you know, I think really good. It's just kind of one of these things that it's like, you know, does that prevent us from getting ahead and from innovating and investing more in new technology? I don't know.
100%.
To your point with the Polestar 2, actually, I was on the launch program back in 2019. I was part of a team who took it around Europe and North America when it launched. And at that stage, it was known already there was a tariff put on the car. So it was already, when we were launching it, you know, the team was like, you know, unfortunately, we know that the price is not where we want it to be, because they initially launched with the launch edition where it was like the fully loaded version. And it was like $70,000 or something like that. So it was really expensive for what it was. And that's because the tariff was already baked into the price at that stage. So to already struggle when it first came out with the tariff at that point to what we're seeing right now, I don't blame them for being like, it's just not going to make any sense. We're already struggling to sell these, and we can improve it all we want. But the reality is this is going to be too expensive, especially compared to what's on the market. So
it's
tough. It,
as you say, these programs are long. They just updated the Polestar 2 this week with the new Qualcomm Snapdragon processor. That is a welcome upgrade, because it can be a little bit laggy as updates roll out, new apps roll out. And like all things, what was snappy 4 or 5 years ago gets a little bit a little bit slow. And they also added some new, I think it's Bang & Olufsen sound system stuff in there in the new Polestar. What else, Dom? New alloys, something else, I forget. That Polestar 2 got updated this week, and that'll probably take it through to 2030 now. And that's a vehicle that was unveiled in
2019, right?
No. When it was unveiled next to the XC40, because it was going to be a Volvo. It was going to be the sedan version of the XC40, wasn't it? It was like 2015, 2016. When Volvo unveiled that car, and then they spun off Polestar and it became its own thing.
Was that long ago?
Yes. Wow. That car is going to be 15 years old when it ends in like 2030, and it will have been updated and whatnot. And I say that just to kind of explain to people that the timelines in the auto industry are not like a burger shop where you might think we probably need to order some more buns for tomorrow. You know, the CFOs that are making decisions on hiring and firing tens of thousands of people and pension funds and unions and everything, they're working on timescales of 10 and 15 and 20 years. And I raised this point to somebody recently who then just, you know, accused me of being like a massive lefty Democrat. And they totally missed the point I was saying. Like, that's what the old administration was trying to do with the Inflation Reduction Act, which is the $7,500 federal tax credit for all of its wrongs and the way it was implemented. And I think it ended up in a good place, you know, it's cash on the hood, and some dealers you know, they weren't necessarily administering it correctly, but it ended up in an okay place. As Lacey said, I think Brennan in the comments said, that was designed every year, year over year, to gradually increase the proportion of vehicles that had to be, you know, US sourced, processed, and assembled. And it's why so many vehicles didn't have it. Like the Cybertruck didn't have the federal tax credit until the beginning of this year. And everyone says, oh, Tesla's the most American company going. And yet they, and even they didn't have it. And so these kind of steps, which are maybe nuanced and gentle and probably, you know, were presented by a 80-something-year-old stuttering old man, probably didn't seem very sexy. And they were like, well, you know, these kind of lefty, whatever, wishy-washy things. And I wasn't trying to make the point about politics to this person. And they didn't really, you know, maybe they just weren't capable of sort of thinking it through at that level, which was like, you can't just impose these things overnight and say, right, here it is, you all get on with it. And of course, everyone will get on with it.
It's kind of the same with the NEVI funding, you know, it's like, yeah, it takes years to get this stuff in the ground and people are complaining that it's not up and ready yet. Now, as far as the, you know, Inflation Reduction Act, I think the problem was that they pitched it as like, we're going green. And it was like a sustainability message. And that really ties into the, obviously their party and the politics of it. But the, what I always saw it at, and that, you know, when I was doing several dealer training programs throughout the last couple of years of this being implemented, I said, you know, try to just see it as a business opportunity to start making things here in the United States and picking the technologies that are, you know, the future of the global, you know, economic industry and impact and stuff like that. So that's why we saw the battery incentive for the people to produce them here and that to scale up over time. And that's why we also saw with the CHIPS Act trying to build here. So it's not just EVs and cars in general. It's like, what can we do to bring manufacturing to the United States in a way that incentivizes them instead of punishes them? So it all takes time, as you said. This is not like a flip of a switch that these take place. I don't think that, you know, obviously it's going to be a slower period of time, but I think we're seeing it at this stage. Everyone is affected no matter what kind of powertrain, you know, like every car company is going to have to make really tough decisions at this stage and move it around. But, you know, we got 4 years of this. Is that what's going to happen, you know, even after that? So although things move in like almost 4 year increments for them to change things at the automakers, like, by the time they get it done, is something else going to change? That's kind of what I'm getting at, is that the last presidential administration, people were like kind of hesitant, automakers were hesitant to kind of like invest here because they knew there was the opportunity for Trump to come in, and he was been saying all the things that he has been saying, that tariffs are coming and this and that. So waiting game, we are here again.
In the comments, John says, but NEVI did take too long. After 2 years, most should have been in the ground. They didn't even apply.
No.
And John,
I don't agree with that, just because
there's a really good show in the archive that I wasn't on, but there's a really good show in our archive about NEVI, and it's really difficult, isn't it, Lacey?
Yeah. Like, well, it was a phased out program. That's what I think a lot of people don't realize, is that this was planned out to have phase one, phase two, phase three, and for the states each to decide how their RFP process was going to go and how they were going to determine who got the funds. And some of these states literally had to just create off the fly the whole program itself, which takes so much time. So there were deadlines for things, but like, to be fair, you know, some states should have more, or even just some RFPs like done and they haven't, but it's not really like, I mean, I know it's like delayed, but it's kind of on time for what the projection was with the phasing of how it was structured.
Yeah. And everyone was expected to become an expert in this. There were meant to be 50, all of a sudden, 50 experts in every state who understood how this works. And from the little bit that we all know about it, it's fabulously difficult to acquire enough hardware, enough grid connection, enough land. Like, I've done interviews over the years with people whose, you know, whole job it is just to find land for EV chargers in the right place. Like, there's a bazillion different AI algorithms running all of the time to work out where are the major highways, how far will people travel off them to get to the land, and then scanning maps, being like, okay, there's this parcel of land here. Who owns it? Let's get in contact. This would be a good place. There's a grid connection here, and there's a main road here, and you call that person, and they're like, well, no, I'm not selling you my land. And this is fabulously difficult to say it should all be in the ground in 2 years. I understand why you would feel that way. Like, you totally should feel that way if you're not an expert in the area, and I'm not an expert in the area, but I talked to them, and to get where you did in 4 years or 2 years is just incredible progress that happened. But again, downside, should it have been more centrally administered? Have one expert at a federal level that's like, you're all doing this, but all of a sudden then there's a Brit criticizing the way that you know, the very structure of your entire country. So I'm not going to go down that road. But we're a small island and we can do that. We can be like, right, you're all doing this. Even then, our government give all the local councils, with all these little numpties sitting, you know, at a desk, or, you know, in a town hall once a month in front of local residents who are both complaining about, why their bin collection was missed 3 weeks ago. And then all of a sudden the government dumps a ton of money on them and saying, oh, you can put some charges in the ground. Like these people working in local politics are going to be like, okay. So then somebody comes along in a sharp suit being like, hey, you can do this and we'll solve all that for you. I'm not surprised things go wrong when you hand it to a level of people who are, it's not their fault. They're not experts in this. But anyway.
It's all new to them. The states too. A lot of the states were like, well, can we reevaluate so that we can collect some of this money that we have? Like, say we have a, you know, rest stop on this side of the highway, mm-hmm. you know, right. How can we, you know, although we've gone through this RFP process and have mm-hmm. got some bids, maybe we can actually take that money and implement this instead. So there was a lot of that too. And to some people's point, like Maki Vlog, yes, there were definitely politics at play here, because a lot of Republican states just refused to move forward with the programming. So you're going to get that. I mean, I'm not kind of at this stage of the political climate, I'm not surprised by that, but it was a process.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll wait and see. Like I say, none of us are experts, and don't hold us to that. And also the thing that is always amusing to me in terms of where we've got to. There was even a famous British politician, and I think it was either around COVID or Brexit or whatever, and they basically went on TV and went, oh, we're all just sick of experts telling us what to do. And that really resonates with so many people right now, because the idea of going away and studying a subject for 20 years and then coming to it and saying, well, here's my opinion, that's really boring. That doesn't get ratings, or that's not exciting. And so it's much easier to kind of be this sort of freewheeling, hey, my opinion's this. Because as everyone says now, like, who needs experts? But we genuinely do need a calm head, listen to people whose job it is to understand this. And, you know, I don't understand things like the stock market, but my phone is somewhere and it's telling me that basically Ford, Stellantis, Tesla, you know, are all down massively. And again, I don't understand that, because a company's either worth something or it's not. Like yesterday, maybe 3 or 4 days ago, why was Tesla worth 15% more? Like, I just don't understand that. And everyone's like, well, the market hates it. Like, a company didn't change in like 3 days, and that this should have all been factored in. Like, Tesla was certainly, because these tariffs on the CATL packs were coming in 2026, I think, that the Biden administration put that in. Like, they knew it was coming, and it all gets factored in, and all of a sudden, you know, all these stock prices are down, everyone's panicking, and I'm like, I just need an expert to tell me what it means, and no one's an expert anymore because experts aren't sexy. But what can you do?
And it's too much involved. I mean, there's so many little factors that it's hard to consider everything, you know?
I know. But we are experts on electric vehicles, and we will bring it back to those right now in terms of
EVs. Yes.
So, and I will happily say that's exactly what the three of us know a lot about. And I mean that humbly, but also, this is what we do. So let's talk about EVs again. So the Hyundai Ioniq 6 was just unveiled at the Seoul Mobility Show in Korea. It's been on the receiving end of a refresh. The front is very different. Dom can pick some pictures up online, but a very slim line of pixel DRLs, the daytime running lights that separate the headlights almost hidden below. The rear is, let's say, tidied with the removal of the double spoiler in favour of a single extended ducktail spoiler. In appearance, it was seen by many people as polarising. One of those vehicles that looked so different, I think, in pictures to real life. I don't think there's a different car that I can think of that just looks... I hate the way it looks in the picture. And then you'd see one in real life and you go like, oh, that kind of looks fine. Like, that's quite nice. The interior has been changed as well. Redesigned steering wheel, other subtle touches. Tech-wise, let's talk about that. They weren't really clear, actually, but we don't know exactly. I assume that they've got the Hyundai packs from the IONIQ 5, 63 kilowatt hours and 84 kilowatt hours, and have put them in the IONIQ 6, because you would think that's what's happening. So it was EPA'd at 342 miles, the old pack 77.4, and so does this edge it towards 400, over 400 miles EPA? That would be exciting. They showed off the N-line. Now, the N-line is not spicy. The way that they use the phrase N-line is, oh, this looks exciting, but it's really not. It's not the N-trim. Now, the N-trim is where you want to, that's where you want to be. And they did show a little bit off about
this. It's like
this.
BMW with their M-line, their M-trim, and then the M5, you know, like very different vehicles.
Very different. I think it's no secret that there'll be an N version of this, like the IONIQ 5. How much they read, because the IONIQ 5 is a very different car. I mean, the track is wider and it's redesigned, different technology under the skin to get the N version. But, they get twin spoilers back for that. So, Lacey, this is the new look of the IONIQ 6. What did you think about this refresh this week, what they've done to it?
I think it looks better. You know, it's still an odd shape, as some people are mentioning in the comments, but, you know, it's I think, pretty slippery, so it's got a great drag coefficient. They want to kind of keep that going, but the headlights now kind of match the design language a little bit closer to what they have with the Elantra already, so it makes sense to me that they're kind of going in this direction with the very thin LED light. I think on the Elantra, it's all the way across, but this is kind of a variation of it so that it kind of sits apart from that.
It's pixelified.
I like the way it looks. I mean, I personally really like the IONIQ 6, even the first generation. It didn't look as cool as what the concept was supposed to, you know, when they come out with the concept and then they come out with the production version, you could tell they really like softened it up in comparison. But, you know, that rear wheel drive, you know, with great range. I mean, it was exceptional. And to think that they could potentially put the IONIQ 5, the new upgraded system in there with the battery packs being a little bit bigger is exciting, because, man, if it can hit over that 400 mile range, that's going to be great. But again, we'll see what ends up happening. I know that factory that, you know, Hyundai announced last week a bunch of investment in the U.S. as far as their manufacturing goes, and producing the IONIQ 5 and 9 at the Meta plant, which is now, they just unveiled it with their grand opening, even though they've been building it for a while. If they can bring this there, that'd be nice.
Absolutely. It looks great, I think.
This is a shot of the interior. It's got a new steering wheel for the interior. They didn't tell us a whole lot about it, but we know that it's got a new wheel. It's got some different, I think the door cards have different materials on it, and things are laid out a little bit differently here and there, basically.
I wonder if those cameras for wing mirrors will only be for the Korean market, or whether they'll be optioned in Europe. I wonder.
Usually
they're okay. They work
the
fine. Like, they work fine. It's just, I just have mirrors. I wouldn't spend the money.
We actually took the mirrors off the Cybertruck like maybe a month into owning it, and we only use cameras, and it's actually shockingly like just fine. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like, have not been like, oh, I need those at all.
Yeah. It works. Really? It works. The IONIQ 6 is a bit like a Magic Mouse, which is one of those. In both that it looks like a Magic Mouse from from its side profile, but also much like the Magic Mouse, people get very upset about it because the Magic Mouse has a charging port there, and people get like on Apple forums or whatnot livid about the Magic Mouse. And I'll tell you how the Magic Mouse works. When I go and get a coffee once every 6 months, I put it on charge with a lightning connector. And then I come back 10 minutes later and it's full. That's the inconvenience. And people get livid about the IONIQ 6. Like, look at the rear end. It's terrible. It's awful. And I'm like, well, just don't buy it then. People get really upset about this vehicle, and they get really heated about the Arnic 6. If you haven't seen one in real life, and if you have and you still don't like it, that's fine, don't buy it. It's not as bad. It is definitely a bit of an acquired taste. But look, the people who designed this, again, have been doing it a long time. Like, they know what they're doing. They designed it to get a certain range, and it behaves in a certain way. They're very good at being designers. That's how you get to be the head designer of a car company, by the way. And, by not being terrible at your job. And it's a great, efficient vehicle. Not to everyone's taste. I totally understand it. They probably have tidied this up a little bit. A bit like the Kia EV6. I thought, when I saw the Kia, or even the Tesla Model Y, when that got refreshed, I didn't think that the old one looked bad until I saw the new one. And I'm like, well, I like the new one, but maybe I just like new stuff and new toys. Because I like the new model. Everyone says it's just like bland Chinese identikit. Well, it was designed in China by Tesla China team. But I like the Model Y. I think it's improvements. So I want the new one now. I like the Kia EV6. There's nothing wrong with the old one. But then you'll see the new one. I think that's rather nice. And this is nice as well. But there's nothing wrong with the old one. But there we go.
Will this have an AX port?
Oh, yes. Of course. Should do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Made in.
Do we know if it's going to be built in the U.S.? I mean, that's another thing now, right? Where are they going to build this thing?
I think it's supposed to be built in Korea.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, like, yeah, like that's like a giggle because who knows?
Who knows? That's the thing.
Things can change tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I think it looks cool. It looks nice. Oh, you go. Go on.
Oops. What are you going to show us? I hit the wrong button. I'm hitting the wrong button here.
You massive tease.
I wanted to bring up one more of the picture of the three cars again on the stage, if I can figure out which one it is.
With the end version.
Yeah, if I can. There's like. Oops, no, that's not. You know, I've been doing this for a while now, and I should have this down.
This week, Hyundai also showed off the Instaroid. We'll get to that in a minute while Dom finds his picture. Here we go. It's online. Oh, it's on the screen right now.
Oh, I don't know if I can. So if you look in the back between the two cars, that is
Where the N version was.
The N version is, and you can see it's got the double spoilers are back. If I had it opened up in the other, there's like different ways to bring up things on the screen, and I'm doing it the way that I can't enlarge the the image so it just focus about. I can work that out here in a sec.
Okay. But that, you know, we'll wait and see how much of a redesign that is, like they redesigned the five, the Instaroid, because the Insta is the Casper, is the European name. Everything outside of Korea where it's called the Casper, it's called the Insta, because like I said last week, the friendly ghost people called and said you can't call it that. I genuinely think that's the reason. And the Instaroid is a massive rear wing with a small car attached to it, and if we can find a picture of that, then we will. The concept goes even beyond what you might imagine from an N trim. It was just, I mean, we just designed a rear wing and we put a little car on the beanie at the front of it. It looks very, very cool. And hopefully they'll, I just love car companies doing stuff. It's just they've got bandwidth to do stuff like this. It's a bit like doing just silly little vanity projects. I love it. Right, we haven't got a picture of that, we'll move on. Now.
Here we go.
Some of the designs that they're coming out with, was it the Vision N? That really cool retro style coupe. That looks amazing. Like, they're doing really well, I think, on the design front. Man, that little, I wish we could have that. I wish we could have this. Like,
how cool is this?
It is so right? cool. Now, it was published on April Fool's, though, so that made me nervous.
Yeah, I saw some stuff on April the 1st that I couldn't decide if it was true or not.
Because
April Fools are meant to be ridiculous. And we live in a world now where everything is so ridiculous that it could be true.
Cybertruck exists.
In the old days, you'd read the newspaper, and as the story went on, it would get more and more ridiculous. And then you go, oh, okay, this is the one April Fools they're put into the newspaper today. I think just stuff was happening on April the 1st that, you know, what did Dom send me a thing about investment? Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway was investing in Tesla. And I was like, oh, it was like, obviously
the headline.
Like a massive investor in BYD over the years. And there's obviously no love lost between. They've had a bit of a, not a war of words, but Musk has picked on Buffett. And I think Warren Buffett cares what Musk says. And Dom sent me that. And I was like, oh, interesting. That would be a big move for Berkshire Hathaway to invest in. And then they were like, hey, April Fools. I'm like, but sort of not ridiculous. You know, like that's right. That's a very believable industry story. It would be an interest, a very big story, but not ridiculous. And they're like, April Fools. Anyway, that's the Ioniq stuff and the Hyundai stuff this week. Let's talk charging, because that's, I find this very, very interesting topic. Yes. Hot on the heels of BYD's megawatt flash charger, which was a 1,000-volt platform delivering 1,000 amps. Which is a ton of current into retail vehicles that you and I could go buy if we were in China, of course. Two other car companies said only a megawatt. Now, I wonder how much of this was in response, how much of it was always planned. I don't know. I have my suspicions. Zeekr unveiled a 1,200 kilowatt charger, so 1.2 megawatt charger for their passenger cars in China. Huawei announced 1,500 kilowatt charger. This, though, to begin with their commercial vehicles with larger batteries, I think. Both companies have plans for deploying these in their networks. The Huawei one is to start with electric trucks. And when I say trucks, I don't mean like pickup trucks, but as in commercial vehicles. No. Zeekr's is all about passenger vehicles. This is just utterly incredible. The BYD stuff goes into the ground. Oh, we're in April now, so the BYD, not a megawatt. I think it starts at only 500 or 600 kilowatts, the stuff going in the ground this week. And the two cars, the Han L and the Tang L, I think, are the first two vehicles on that 1,000-volt architecture, which I think will be able to fully utilize that megawatt charging when it comes. Jason says, a distinction of Zeekr's charger is the ability to deliver it through a single connector. Yeah, or a, what was it they called it in China? Guns. They call it guns, don't they, Dom? Yeah. Through a single
twin
gun.
Twin gun method is what BYD uses.
Yeah.
They need two different charge ports for one car.
So the chargers must be 500 kilowatts rated, and they use the dual guns. Right, okay, I get it. Yeah. Right. And right. Huawei's.
But was, so,
yeah. Or Zeekr's so was on one gun, yeah.
Right. And it's, I feel like it's probably a bit more sophisticated and advanced maybe than what BYD has. I don't think they were planning on rolling that out quite so soon, but I think the BYD announcement kind of moved things up a bit. You know, they want to make sure people know that they're still in the technology race, basically. But we should remember the two that, you know, like we have megawatt chargers here. Like Tesla has a megawatt charger with the MCS. So that's the megawatt charging system, connector. It's like a big triangle shaped thing. Too big for passenger vehicles, I think, for private passenger vehicles, but for commercial trucks, it's great. So we do have, I think there's another company too that has a megawatt. Are you familiar with any?
Yeah, I think there are a few. I think the stations Watt EV has in California, they have all megawatt because they're doing all trucking and stuff at the port and across the state. So there are several, and we saw a lot at the EV charging summit of megawatt connectors and things like that.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's true. So probably more of a, like a 5% of the companies have like megawatt chargers out there kind of deal. Mm. 10.
Yeah, I would say probably something like that. It's developing. I mean,
Where are you on fast charging speeds? Because Neo responded by pointing out that they've swapped 70 million batteries now and are swapping 88,000 batteries a day. And they're like, we don't need fast charging because we got battery swapping. And
I'm like, a day.
Yeah, a day, 88,000 swaps.
I personally like swapping. I know a lot of people don't, but I think that the proof is there that it works and that it is a viable option. If we want all people to go electric, you need a lot of different solutions. And so, yeah, I think it's great that there's innovation as far as like increasing speed for DC fast charging, whether that is on the fleet side for semis and stuff like that, or for passenger cars like what BYD is doing. But I personally am an advocate of like all the solutions. And I think battery swapping is very interesting, and it's proven over in China. It's not going to be like widespread here in the United States as far as like it being at every little town, but in the metro areas, I think it does make sense because you have restrictions as far as building out infrastructure in really tight areas, or where, you know, people don't have the ability to put in DC fast chargers in particular. So I think eventually we will see some opportunity. It's the issue of getting the OEMs on board for a standardization. But to be fair, you know, I kind of mentioned this when I was at the Electrify Expo. I was there and I saw you, Dominic, there because I was hosting a EV reality check session in the expo with Matt Teske, who runs Chargeway. Yeah. And we were talking about this, and to be fair, I mean, we've already got some collaboration going across the automotive industry for a lot of different OEMs. I mean, like this isn't new in that regard, but when we talk about someone like an IANA, where 8 car companies come together to build out charging infrastructure for DC fast charging, I can see there being an opportunity for that kind of a coalition to collaborate and make a system that's standardized so that they can offer that as an option and maybe not necessarily have to put all the money towards it in just one automaker deciding to do it. So I think there's potential for it to happen. I don't know when, but I would love to see it, because I think there are every solution needs to come together in order to get more people to go electric. So
yeah, no, I completely agree. I don't know whether the super fast charging speeds will take off in, you know, in many places. I say that, you know, that BYD want to have something silly like 4,000 of them in the ground by the end of the year. And so, but China's very different to many markets as well. Yep. And again, I said it many times, I physically can't go very far till I fall off the end of my island that I live on. Like, you know, the UK is very, very small compared to the US. I think the US could do with EVs and chargers that you literally can like just drive 400 miles, stop, and in 10 minutes you're 80% charged and go again. We wouldn't say no to it, but it wouldn't be utilized very much. China's very different. Then again, China's got a really well-run, efficient, established public transport system as well. So a lot of people, when they do long distances in China, don't even take the car. They take the train because you can, because it works. So that's, you know, the whole way that people move about different countries and continents is so different. Will it work in Europe? Well, they do. There is battery swapping here, and it's just not kind of taken off yet. So I don't know. And also DC fast charging really peaks here at about 200, like 150 or 200. Of course, there's 350 kilowatt units around, but, you know, they're not ubiquitous. And if I can't find one, I'm really not losing much sleep. I just don't need that extra like 3 or 4 minutes.
I feel the same, and I am like all about having more range with less as far as your battery capacity. Like, make it a smaller battery, give me more range, and I should be happy because I can charge at home. But a lot of people can't charge at home, which is why they haven't gone electric yet. And so whether it is from the commercial side or the fleet side, or you know, people that are in urban environments that they can't necessarily get it done, with getting installed at level 2 at their, you know, high rise, you know, I don't know, all options. I think I'm open to having more options, but
yeah.
As far as commercial side of things, I think it's really great to see the faster charging, because those are big monster batteries and the semis that need to get recharged quicker.
That's a good shout. Yeah. Even a bus that is, you know, even a small bus would have a 400 or 500 kilowatt hour pack. And so, yeah, lots of juice to go in to commercial vehicles.
I think the holdup here really is for fast charging is just the batteries. I mean, so BYD has a battery. I mean, there's a few batteries now that can kind of, BYD's says it can handle, you know, 10C, but, you know, we don't really have, even in the US, we don't even have like the 5 and 6C batteries that, you know, China's kind of just now, you know, rolling out, you know. So those ones can charge in like 10, 12 minutes. But so, yeah, for people, like, I just keep going back to this conversation I had with my Uber driver in the Los Angeles area a few weeks back. You know, he bought a Subaru because he can't charge. He doesn't have time. He doesn't have time to wait. You know, that's the other thing with charging cars right now. The infrastructure is a little bit, it's there's not enough of it yet in some places like California, in Southern California. And the throughput, it's just too slow. So once, you know, battery speeds pick up, you know, the same amount of number of stations can, you know, charge a lot more cars in a period of time. So, you know, it's something I think we're going to get. We're going to get faster batteries, and I think we're going to need faster batteries. I mean, battery swapping is cool, and I think it's a nice technology. Mm-hmm. It's all, sorry?
An idea. It's a good idea. But like the thing is also that NIO has partnerships with CATL now, so they're developing the standardization, and it's widespread. So like there, it makes sense because it's not just NIO using that technology. And actually, I just read yesterday that the new holding company that bought McLaren Automotive is going to use some of NIO's, because they're one of the bigger investors in NIO, and they're going to start using NIO technology in the new road cars. I mean, we won't see those for probably a long time, but they're going to be utilizing some of their technology for their global automotive platform.
NIO's got some good stuff. They got access to that semi-solid state battery, you know, 350 watt hours per kilogram. Just long range batteries, you can go 1,000 miles. And there's some really great things about battery swapping. I don't know that it works super well in North America, but I'm not
it's about first of
people trying
to do it.
Yeah, and it's about getting them in the ground as well. Like, you know, if you are in China and you live in an apartment block and you can't charge at home, and you can save money on buying a car because you're not buying the battery portion. You're just renting or leasing the battery portion of the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of reasons why it makes perfect sense. And they're everywhere because NIO put the investment in. And then it makes perfect sense to do it. But until you drive past them and see them, and then it gives you the confidence to do it, the whole battery size, cost, charging rate conundrum, we just go around. A really good kind of segue from that to this is the BrightDrop vans, the BrightDrop 400 and BrightDrop 600. Those vehicles are just not selling as well as they could be until the end of June. Those vehicles have got $25,500 off them. And I think there is also the tax credit you can get with those vehicles as well. If you even, you know, at Costco, you get $3,000 more off as well till the end of May. And so those are excellent vehicles, but with very, very large batteries, and are therefore very expensive. And Jim Farley came out either in response to it or as an adjacent comment to that story, because obviously a lot of people are buying the e-Transit, and the e-Transit's doing very well. And he said something along the lines of, people only need as much battery as they need. So if you do 60 miles a day as a city delivery driver, why would you go and buy a Bright, or your business has a fleet of city delivery vans, why would you buy a BrightDrop? You just, because the battery's huge in it and it's really expensive.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a great vehicle though. It's a really good vehicle.
I think they start around like $60,000 or something like that, and the Transit is more affordable, but again, like the 150 miles of range versus the 250 miles of range, you know, that's kind of like, for more money, are you willing to spend more if your routes are longer? But usually they're maybe not, but they do work for other applications, which I'm kind of surprised they haven't sold as many, because when you look at the comparison of all the electric commercial vans on the market, it is like specification wise, like the best that's out there, in my opinion. But we did a piece on the Grounded RVs, which takes a BrightDrop and converts it into a camper van, which was really interesting. And those guys even are working with GM to basically optimize that platform and tell them what they are looking for as far as their customers, because it's not just, you know, the fleet or commercial application side of things that people can use it for. A lot of people really do want a camper van that can fulfill those needs.
I have a question for you, Lacey. So you spent that time with Grounded. So right now, if you can get all those discounts on the BrightDrops, I think you can get them. Let's see. I lost the place where I had it. It's 42. Yeah, effectively, the price can be as low as $42,300 for the short wheelbase.
That is a
BrightDrop.
That's a great vehicle for that.
Right. I mean, that's like, why would you not buy that? Like, I want one just like to have for I don't know.
Just for moving.
Start an LLC.
I could start a little moving company with that. Yeah. Actually. You know, actually,
there is a funny, you know, Mark says in the comments, it's, you know, it's because they're ugly. And I think Mark
is commercial vehicles.
I don't think it's that ugly.
And they're not bad. There's a lot worse.
I don't know if Mark is being sarcastic
or
not. But
I mean, that is, you know,
fleet buyers, or if you run a, if you are a fleet manager, you genuinely don't care what a vehicle looks like. You'll need to know about the range, the utility, the payload, the access. Hopefully, you're also factoring in things like the comfort of the women and men driving them every day, and is it air conditioned, and, and you know, whatnot. But hopefully, you're thinking about those things. But ultimately, you're going to the bottom right of your spreadsheet and looking at that little number there.
Yes.
And if it's lower than the other one, then you're going to get that vehicle because it's, you are just saving money in a fleet environment. If it does everything that you need to, it ticks every box. It might be nice to have a Mercedes-Benz badge on the front of a, you know, of your nice e-Sprinter, but if you can do it with some no-name Chinese van and like the service, obviously there'll be a service schedule on it, there'll be a maintenance schedule, there'll be, you know, lease cost and insurance, and you factor all that in, whatever that number says, if you run 100 vehicles in your fleet, you'll just go with the cheapest option. So yeah, and that's for like 45 grand for a bright drop is fantastic.
So I want to bring up that question again. I didn't quite finish asking
it. Sorry.
It's okay. Let's see, with Grounded, do they supply the vehicle, or can you like go out and take advantage of this crazy deal? And like, so the like the long wheelbase one is like, you can get as low as $46,400.
So what Grounded does is they'll you decide if you want the smaller wheelbase or if you want the larger wheelbase, and it's all the same price. Like, even if you buy the shorter one, it doesn't matter, because what they do is they upfit the whole interior to make it into a camper van. Now, they at this stage are charging the flat rate, and I think it's like, I want to say like $250,000. And I know that sounds like a lot. It is a lot. Not, but when you compare it to like a camper van, or like, especially with the customization that you get, it's not that out of the realm. I know it is expensive, but it is about what some of those cost as far as competitively. But obviously, you don't have the maintenance and the whatnot when it comes to, you know, an internal combustion engine version, like a Sprinter or something like that. But they don't, like, it's a flat fee for the cost of that. So, I mean, if you wanted to do it yourself, you could. I mean, they just do all that for you and you pay the extra for it. But that's up to the customer to decide if they want to do
that. So I was just thinking of like what would be a good way to go, like if you're like really budget minded. So I guess the way to go, I guess in my mind then, is to go out, buy this and do it yourself, do the upfit yourself, basically.
Which I is think not, they're still only available as far as like through the commercial division, really? Involve or whatever GM's division is. So like you have to buy it with like a business.
Right. Yeah. I think it's doable for a lot of people though. Like I have a business. Sort of, you know, enough to, but then it was,
I know, so I wanted to buy one.
Like, yes.
Yeah. So I just want to mention real quick, because I have it on the screen here. Chris from the Bow Family EV channel, which is a great channel. Please check it out. I believe he's a FedEx contractor. Don't quote me. You can correct me if I'm wrong, Chris. And he says he uses both the E-Transit and a lot of BrightDrop for their routes. And the BrightDrop is great. We get over 300 miles on some routes. Wow. And I also have one in use, actually, when I was in California last time. And it's like, man, this is so nice. I mean, for a driver doing that kind of work, it's quick and it's quiet. And it's such a great vehicle, because been stuck driving a lot of these type of vehicles before in my former life. And I just get excited about the BrightDrop fans. And it's like you said, I'm really surprised at how little they're selling. I feel like, I don't know if the industry doesn't know about them. It's like a secret or something. But
maybe it's the installing the infrastructure side of things that has been kind of spooking them out too, because you know, some of them, they have to upgrade their electricity and the process of getting the level 2 equipment. That's a good point that Chris brought up, because Sam, when I interviewed him in my video with the Grounded RV, said that they were regularly getting over 300 miles of range, so it was more efficient than they thought. which was, you know, really, really great. But we're supposed to take one out to, they have the latest generation of it. The one that I did the interview with Sam with was the G2, but now they have a G3 coming out. And so
they're
going to give it to us to take on a trip. So we'll stay tuned for that.
Cool. If you go to the Grounded YouTube channel, they have a show coming up in the next few days. You can click on it to get notified when it goes live. And it might be around that G3 that you're talking. I'm not really sure. I just saw it and I clicked on the thing, so I get notified. But I didn't really take notes.
Yeah, that's cool. Right, a few things that we will mention before we depart for another week. Well, another week, another CEO, two CEOs actually, say it, and Cupra's CEO departed on the day, which happens probably for a couple of reasons. Firstly, you know, personal reasons, and we hope everyone, you know, his name is Wayne Griffiths, and he really drove SEAT, and Cupra was the performance bit underneath it before Cupra was spun out, meant to be coming to North America. That's a little bit up in the air now. And really drove that business forward under the Volkswagen Group umbrella with electrification. The vehicles look really cool. The Born is a much more, I think, a kind of a aggressive, dynamic looking ID3, and they've got some other great cars as well at Cupra. He left that day. So yeah, one of two things, either personal reasons, and we hope everyone, he's okay, his family's okay, or, you know, I know Stellantis are looking to make some big, you know, maybe not the you know, the replacement to Carlos Tavares. That'd be quite a jump in his career. But they're, you know, Stellantis are making some big hires in Europe. And normally, you know, when someone goes that day and heads onto gardening leave, it could be that he's left Volkswagen Group. I think he joined in 89 really led that bit of the business through electrification. He could turn up somewhere and do the same thing again. And so, you know, other times, because they didn't say where he was going, just we wish him well. And I'm like, oh, does that sound like he's been poached? And he'll turn up in 6 months when his contract allows him to talk about it. So that's interesting. The other one was we mentioned Polestar already. Of course, CEOs do a very interesting job at the head of the business. You know, look at the Polestar CEO, Thomas Ingenlath, as was CEO, designed that Polestar, head designer of Volvo. I think, you know, the best looking cars on the roads, why I own one. And whenever I pass, you know, that era of Volvo just, oh, so on point, was made CEO. Does a head designer make a great CEO? I don't know. He's been replaced. And then you may have seen on the recent launch of the Volvo ES90, the CEO, Jim Rowan, who comes from tech, I want to say Nokia or BlackBerry, but he comes from a tech background, was talking about super stack or tech stacks and millions of operations per second and whatnot. It was all kind of a little bit over my head, but all looks very interesting. And he was saying, look, this is where cars need to be now, built like Rivian talk about with their software-defined vehicle in modules that can upload everything to the cloud, so that if in Volvo's case, it was safety. So that if there is an accident or a near miss or a collision, having all of that data that can be uploaded and analyzed to work out what could have done. Could the airbag have deployed milliseconds earlier or later? How could we have made the situation better? And he's talked about how, if you're a car company that isn't talking about what's our cloud infrastructure, what's our tech behind it, you know, you're not going to be in the game. Well, he's not anymore because he got replaced as well. You know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss, Volvo.
I was going to say, new? Nope.
So, Håkan Samuelsson is back. And now he was the old CEO of Volvo.
I like Håkan.
Made those big moves into electrification. Mm-hmm. Volvo were the first to say, we are going to stop making combustion cars. You know, Volvo
gone.
Were the ones like, we will speed,
the
speed limit our cars for safety to 100 and whatever miles an hour, because why do you want to go far? Made big moves that were very well received largely. And he's 70.
Had big sales too. During he had like
doubled the business.
Record sales in like 6 or 8 of the 10 years he was there.
Yeah, look at where Volvo came out of the, you know, the 2000s era, past the 2010s, and then at least doubled the business. And the cars, you know, fantastic design cars. And I think he's 72 or 74. He signed on for 2 years, like a 2 year deal. So,
was it that long?
Yeah.
Okay. I get that detail. I was thinking it was just like a placeholder to kind of keep the ship going.
No, I think he's more than a Mark Winterhoff at Lucid is billed as interim CEO. I think he is the new CEO for a couple of years. And to use a phrase, a car guy, which I kind of hate that phrase, but he is car industry, at least, through and through, not tech guy through and through. So,
and they need it right now with all these changes happening globally. Like, that's, I think, the big message here is, even though I think Rowan had, like, record profits, record figures for Volvo, but he fact is that there are so many huge changes that you kind of need someone like Samuelson to come back and steer the ship, because this is very scary territory where the automotive business is headed right now. And it's not, as you pointed out, you had the Polestar CEO change, now Volvo, you've had Stellantis, you've got, you know, Nissan's changed. So there's a lot of shift in who's in charge here, because all these car companies are like, man, I'm nervous. What's going to happen? Someone needs to guide us through these uncharted waters and the scary situation that we're coming up with the tariffs and stuff like that.
Right.
Before we head off, when you went to the charging summit, what was the mood? Were people feeling, because I talk about this day in, day out, and I feel great about EVs. You know, we talk about the UK being at, you know, 28% is our mandate. Again, we might just miss it, but we're heading towards a third of cars being zero emission. Now, you know, we're a little bit different to the EU because we can sort of do our own things since Brexit and whatnot. But Europe, if they get to 20% this year, 22%, full BEV in some countries, obviously Norway's and stuff are outliers. Like, I'm just seeing these amazing figures happen all around the world, and I just feel great every day talking about electric vehicles. And I see the headlines, and I'm like, this doesn't, I want to make sure I'm not deluded. And I don't think I am. So when you went to the Charging Summit and you're talking to all the industry about hardware and software and their industry and investment, what was the mood of the room?
Honestly, from my perspective, there's still, I think, a lot of opportunity with EV charging, especially, like I mentioned earlier, the amount of solutions for all these, like, really, you know, problems that wouldn't be obvious to most people getting done. So, you know, there's still a lot of optimism there. And I feel like, to your point, Martin, the one thing that they were talking about at the EV charging summit was that the pause on the NEVI stuff. And that they were like, we don't know what's going to happen really. And like, we'll see if it starts back up, but even if it's not, we're moving forward. We're still building out, you know, more competitive products to try to, you know, compete with all the other brands that are trying to put in infrastructure, not only from a CPO side of things, a charge point operator side of things and networks. So like, there's still a lot of opportunity for charging, regardless. They would like to see it, you know, paid for with the incentives, but there was no one there that was like, oh, we're, you know, we're worried that it's not going to continue to go on. I think some companies are better positioned than others, of course, to succeed, but didn't seem to me that anyone was worried that the you know, EVs would completely take off. So there's that. Ding dong.
My doorbell but, going off. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
I always, you know, tell people in this space that, you know, electric vehicles, I think they're only just going to continue to grow, because when we look at the internal combustion engine side of things, like, we've pretty much maxed out that technology as far as like its efficiency, its cost. Like, you can only do so much in order to try to make it more, you know, optimized. When we talk about electric vehicles, there's a lot of opportunity and there's a lot of things that we can do in order to make it more affordable for people. And I think that at this stage, affordability is continuing to be the conversation. And whether that it is increasing efficiency to get those batteries smaller or introduce new ideas like leasing the battery systems or whatnot, there's just so much potential, and it's still the total cost of ownership is cheaper. So it's still the future in my eyes. It's just maybe it's a little delayed because now people want to put in EREVs and plug-in hybrids and try to boost that to extend their investment on internal combustion engines. But ultimately, I think EV will win outright just based on its efficiency and cost benefits.
You think that's why manufacturers are kind of really happy to go plug-in hybrid? I hadn't really thought about that aspect of it.
Yeah, I think they're like, this is sweet. We can delay this for a little bit longer. We put, you know, X amount of billions of dollars into this. So let's stretch that out for a little bit longer. So, okay.
Yeah, the speed of change just blows. Like, if you had said to me 10 years ago, in 2025, would you be happy with the rate of adoption, whether that is 20, 25, 30% full BEV, in China it's 50, and the amount of chargers that you see in the ground, I would have bitten your hand off for this life in 2025. Like, the cars we've got on offer.
You're right.
Like, it's just, you know, ask me in 2015 when you got the Tesla Model S and a Leaf and a Zoe that I could have bought. Like, would you be happy with the amount of networks, the chargers, the speed? Now, yeah, we talk about China and 1 megawatt charger, 1.2 megawatt with Zeekr. Like, yeah, I am delighted. I can go anywhere in the world and charge quickly, like anywhere that I could possibly want to drive. Like, it's just, I'm having my best life, and I just don't understand this negativity. It's just so cool. Like, whole charges.
And to think that they're only going to get better, that's what's like so exciting. Oh, yeah. It's like, there are some really great products.
It's not
going to
go backwards,
right now,
is it? It's like, you can't uninvent the technology. Like, it's insane.
I still feel like it's early days. Like, I saw a thing on, like, someone just mentioned batteries need to get better, and we were talking about like 10C batteries and things earlier. And I saw this little thing, I think it was on Inside EVs, just a little coating, 20 nanometers of coating on things in the anode. I think they laser the anode and then they put this little coating on it or whatever, just so that helps the ions get in there and reduce friction and heat, I guess, and makes it more efficient. So I believe they were talking about 10C with that technology as well. And that's really kind of where I think, you know, eventually we're going to be there before at some point.
Well,
we're
going to
wake up and say, oh my God, we're just things of,
yeah,
we're in a whole new world. Basically,
that's
incredible.
And then we talk about the efficiency of, you know, miles per kilowatt hour, which is sort of my language that I tend to use. You know, other variants are available, and just where we're going with that, obviously there's the outliers of the ones that are trying to do it Lucid ahead. There's been some Aptera stuff this week that's good, Mercedes, but perhaps not where they said they would be, but. If you ignore what they promised, it's still very good, but it's not 10 miles per kilowatt hour. But it's just like where we're heading is just mega. It's brilliant. I love it. I can't wait.
Agreed.
But where I'm going right now is to go celebrate my son's 7th birthday, because it's his birthday.
Oh,
it's his birthday today, and he's 7. We're going to go watch the Minecraft movie. And as my wife said to me at lunchtime today, you did book off the podcast, didn't you? Like I said to you a few weeks ago. And I sort of looked around to be like, there's no one in the room to answer this apart from me. Like, right. So no, I totally forgot to book this week off. But it's been good fun. I've loved being here. But I'm going to go do a birthday party now, which is cool. Thank you very much for joining us, Lacey. We just love what you're doing on your channels.
Well,
and the industry
good to
stuff.
Talk to you guys.
Like, I'm not even in the industry, and I can't wait to watch the industry stuff. That's like, I'm looking forward to that.
Good.
Sorry, Don.
Oh, I was just going to mention, too, we have an interview went up from the Orlando Electrify Expo, just going through what they did there. They're looking at their booth, driving a car, talking to a rep about the car and the brand afterwards. So that's up on the channel now. Next Wednesday, probably possibly Tuesday, we should have another really interesting interview up. I don't want to spill any beans yet, but I think a lot of people are going to want to watch this one. It's battery related.
Thank you very much for, as always, your time as well, watching and listening to us. If you do watch in real time, you know, when we're live and joining in the comments, we really appreciate it. If you catch up hours or days later, then maybe the audio version in your ears. We appreciate all of your comments and your support as well. If you are not already giving us a thumbs up on particularly the YouTube channel, it helps spread the word. It's really helpful. Subscription is always good. But yeah, giving us a thumbs up really does help spread the word about what we do. And you can keep your eye out on the channel for some more future programs and some videos we've got coming very soon. Thank you very much for joining us. Have a lovely weekend, whatever you're doing, and we'll see you very soon. Again, very soon. I just brain mouth has all stopped working. Hey, Dom, say ciao.
Ciao.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.